tapering heap. She grinned. The moving castle had often struck her as being remarkably like the inside of a chimney. This building was really a collection of chimney pots. It had to be a fire demon's work. As Sophie panted up the rise, there was suddenly no doubt that this was the witch's fortress. Two small orange figures came out of a dark space at the bottom and stood waiting for her. She recognized the witch's two page boys. Hot and breathless as she was, she tried to speak to them politely to show she had no quarrel with them. "Good afternoon," she said. They just gave her sulky looks. One bowed and held out his hand, pointing toward the misshapen dark archway between the bent columns of chimney pots. Sophie shrugged and followed him inside. The other page walked after her. And, of course, the entrance vanished as soon as she was through. Sophie shrugged again. She would have to deal with that problem when she came back. She rearranged her lace shawl, straightened her draggled skirts, and walked forward. It was a little like going through the castle door with the knob black down. There was a moment of nothingness, followed by murky light. The light came from greenish-yellow flames that burned and flickered all round, but in a shadowy way, which gave no heat and very little light either. When Sophie looked at them, the flames were never where she was looking, but always to the side. But that was the way of magic. Sophie shrugged again and followed the page this way and that among skinny pillars of the same chimney-pot kind as the rest of the building. At length, the pages led her to a sort of central den. Or maybe it was just a space between pillars. Sophie was confused by then. The fortress seemed enormous, though she suspected that it was deceptive, just as the castle was. The witch was standing there waiting. Again, it was hard to tell how Sophie knew, except that it could be no one else. The witch was hugely tall and skinny now, and her hair was fair in a rope-like pigtail over one bony shoulder. She wore a white dress. When Sophie walked straight up to her brandishing her stick, the witch backed away. "I am not to be threatened," the witch said, sounding tired and frail. "Then give me Miss Angorian and you won't be," said Sophie. "I'll take her and go away." The witch backed away further, gesturing with both hands, and the page boys both melted into sticky orange blobs, which rose into the air and flew towards Sophie. "Yucky, get off!" Sophie cried, beating at them with her stick. The orange blobs did not seem to care for her stick. They dodged it and wove about and then darted behind Sophie. She was just thinking she had got the better of them when she found herself glued to a chimney pot pillar by them. Orange sticky stuff stranded between her ankles when she tried to move and plucked at her hair quite painfully. "I'd almost rather have green slime," Sophie said. "I hope those weren't real boys."
"Only emanations," said the witch.
"Let me go," said Sophie.
"No,"
said the witch. She turned away and seemed to lose interest in Sophie entirely. Sophie began to fear that, as usual, she had made a mess of things. The sticky stuff seemed to be getting harder and more elastic every second. When she tried to move, it snapped her back against the pottery pillar.
"Where's Miss Angorian?" she said. "You will not find her," said the witch. "We will wait until Howl comes."
"He's not coming," said Sophie. "He's got more sense. And your curse hasn't all worked anyway."
"It will," said the witch, smiling slightly. "Now that you have fallen for our deception and come here, Howl will have to be honest for once."
She made another gesture, toward the murky flames this time, and a sort of throne trundled out from between two pillars and stopped in front of the witch. There was a man sitting in it, wearing a green uniform and long, shiny boots. Sophie thought he was asleep at first, with his head out of sight sideways. But the witch gestured again. The man sat up straight, and he had no head on his shoulders at all. Sophie realized she was looking at all that was left of Prince Justin. "If I was Fanny," Sophie said, "I'd threaten to faint. Put his head back on at once. He looks terrible like that."
"I disposed of both heads months ago," said the witch. "I sold Wizard Solomon's skull when I sold his guitar. Prince Justin's head is walking around somewhere with the other leftover parts. This body is a perfect mixture of Prince Justin and Wizard Solomon. It's waiting for Howl's head to make it our perfect human. When we have Howl's head, we shall have the new King of Ingory, and I shall rule as queen."
"You're mad," Sophie said. "You've no right to make jigsaws of people, and I shouldn't think Howl's head will do a thing you want. It'll slither out somehow."
"Howl will do exactly as we say," the witch said with a sly, secretive smile. "We shall control his fire demon."
Sophie realized she was very scared indeed. She knew she had made a mess of things now. "Where is Miss Angorian?" she said, waving her stick. The witch did not like Sophie to wave her stick. She stepped backward.
"I am very tired," she said. "You people keep spoiling my plans. First Wizard Solomon would not come near the waste, so that I had to threaten Princess Valeria in order to make the king order him out here. Then, when he came, he grew trees. Then the king would not let Prince Justin follow Solomon for months. And when he did follow, the silly fool went up north somewhere for some reason, and I had to use all my arts to get him here. Howl has caused me even more trouble. He got away once. I've had to use a curse to bring him in. And while I was finding out enough about him to lay the curse, you got into what was left of Solomon's brain and caused me more trouble. And now when I bring you here, you wave your stick and argue. I've worked very hard for this moment, and I am not to be argued with." She turned away and wandered off into the murk. Sophie stared after the tall white figure moving among the dim flames. "I think her age has caught up with her," she thought. "She's crazy. I must get loose and rescue Miss Angorian from her somehow." Remembering that the orange stuff had avoided her stick, just as the witch had, Sophie reached back over her shoulders with her stick and wagged it back and forth where the sticky stuff met the pottery pillar. "Get out of it," she said. "Let me go." Her hair dragged painfully, but stringy orange bits began to fly away sideways. Sophie wagged the stick harder. She had worked her head and shoulders loose when there came a dull booming sound. The pale flames wavered and the pillar behind Sophie shook. Then, with a crash like a thousand tea sets falling downstairs, a piece of the fortress wall blew out. Light blinded in through a long jagged hole, and a figure came leaping in through the opening. Sophie turned eagerly, hoping it was Howl. But the black outline had only one leg. It was the scarecrow again. The witch gave a yowl of rage and rushed toward it with her fair pigtail flying and her bony arms stretched out. The scarecrow leaped at her. There was another violent bang, and the two of them were wrapped in a magic cloud like the cloud over Port Haven when Howl and the witch had fought. The cloud battered this way and that, filling the dusty air with shrieks and booms. Sophie's hair frizzed. The cloud was only yards away, going this way and that among pottery pillars, and the break in the wall was quite near too. As Sophie had thought, the fortress was really not big. Every time the cloud moved across the blinding white gap, she could see through it and see the two skinny figures battling in its midst. She stared and kept wagging her stick behind her back. She was loose, all except her legs, when the cloud streamed across in front of the light one more time. Sophie saw another person leap through the gap behind it. This one had flying black sleeves. It was Howl. Sophie could see the outline of him clearly, standing with his arms folded, watching the battle. For a moment it looked as if he was going to let the witch and the scarecrow get on with it. Then the long sleeves flapped as Howl raised his arms. Above the screaming and booming, Howl's voice shouted one strange, long word, and a long roll of thunder came with it. The scarecrow and the witch both jolted. Claps of sound rang round the pottery pillars, echo after echo, and each echo carried some of the cloud of magic away with it. It vanished in wisps and swirled away in murky eddies. When it had become the thinnest white haze, the tall figure with the pigtail began to totter. The witch seemed to fold in on herself, thinner and whiter than ever. Finally, as the haze faded clean away, she fell in a heap with a small clatter. As the million soft echoes died, Howl and the Scarecrow were left thoughtfully facing one another across a pile of bones. Good, thought Sophie. She slashed her legs free and went across to the headless figure in the throne. It was getting on her nerves. No, my friend, Howl said to the Scarecrow. The Scarecrow had hopped right among the bones and was pushing them this way and that with its leg. No, you won't find her heart here. Her fire demon will have got that. I think it's had the upper hand of her for a long time now. Sad, really. As Sophie took off her shawl and arranged it decently across Prince Justin's headless shoulders, Howl said, I think the rest of what you were looking for is over here. He walked toward the throne with the Scarecrow hopping beside him. Typical, he said to Sophie. I break my neck to get here and I find you peacefully tidying up. Sophie looked up at him. As she had feared, the hard black and white daylight coming through the broken wall showed her that Howl had not bothered to shave or tidy his hair. His eyes were still red-rimmed, and his black sleeves were torn in several places. There was not much to choose between Howl and the Scarecrow. Oh, dear, Sophie thought. He must love Miss Angorian very much. I came for Miss Angorian, she explained. And I thought if I arranged for your family to visit you, it would keep you quiet for once, Howl said disgustedly. But no. Here the Scarecrow hopped in front of Sophie. I was sent by Wizard Solomon, it said in its mushy voice. I was guarding his bushes from the birds in the waste when the witch caught him. He cast all of his magic that he could spare on me and ordered me to come to his rescue. But the witch had taken him to pieces by then, and the pieces were in various places. It has been a hard task. If you had not come and talked me to life again, I would have failed. It was answering the question Sophie had asked it before they both rushed off. So when Prince Justin ordered finding spells, they must have kept pointing to you, she said. Why was that? To me, or to his skull, said the Scarecrow. Between us, we are the best part of him. And Percival is made of Wizard Solomon and Prince Justin, Sophie said. She was not sure Letty was going to like this. The Scarecrow nodded its craggy turnip face. Both parts told me that the witch and her fire demon were no longer together and I could defeat the witch on her own, it said. I thank you for giving me 10 times my former speed. Howl waved it aside. Bring that body with you to the castle, he said. I'll sort you out there. Sophie and I have to get back before that fire demon finds a way of getting inside my defences. He took hold of Sophie's skinny wrist. Come on. Where are those 7-league boots? Sophie hung back. But Miss Angorian... Don't you understand? Howl said, dragging at her. Miss Angorian is the fire demon. If it gets inside the castle, then Calcifer's had it, and so have I. Sophie put both hands over her mouth. I knew I'd made a mess of it, she said. It's been in twice already, but she... It went out. Oh, Lord, groaned Howl. Did it touch anything? The guitar, Sophie admitted. Then it's still in there, said Howl. Come on! He pulled Sophie over to the smashed wall. Follow us carefully, he shouted back to the Scarecrow. I'm going to have to raise a wind. No time to look for those boots,
he said to Sophie as they climbed over the jagged edges into the hot sunlight. Just run and keep running, or I won't be able to move you. Sophie helped herself along with her stick and managed to break into a hobbling run, stumbling among the stones. Hal ran beside her, pulling her. Wind leapt up, whistling, then roaring, hot and gritty, and grey sand climbed around them in a storm that pinged on the pottery fortress. By that time, they were not running, but skimming forward in a sort of slow-motion lope. The stony ground sped past underneath. Dust and grit thundered around them, high overhead and streaming far away behind. It was very noisy and not at all comfortable, but the waste rocketed past.
"It's not Calcifer's fault," Sophie yelled. "I told him not to say."
"He wouldn't, anyway," Hal shouted back. "I knew he'd never give away a fellow fire demon. It was always my weakest flank."
"I thought Wales was," Sophie screamed.
"No, I left that deliberately," Hal bellowed. "I knew I'd be angry enough to stop her if she tried anything there. I had to leave her an opening, see? The only chance I had of coming at Prince Justin was to use that curse she'd put on me to get near her."
"So you were going to rescue the prince," Sophie shouted. "Why did you pretend to run away? To deceive the witch?"
"Not likely," Hal yelled. "I am a coward. Only way I can do something this frightening is to tell myself I'm not doing it."
"Oh, dear," Sophie thought, looking round at the swirling grit. "He's being honest. And this is a wind. The last bit of the curse has come true."
The hot grit hit her thunderously, and Hal's grip hurt.
"Keep running," Hal bawled. "You'll get hurt at this speed."
Sophie gasped and made her legs work again. She could see the mountains clearly now, and a line of green below that was the flowering bushes. Even though yellow sand kept swirling in the way, the mountains seemed to grow, and the green line rushed toward them until it was hedge-high.
"All my flanks were weak," Hal shouted. "I was relying on Suliman being alive. Then when all that seemed to be left of him was Parsifal, I was so scared I had to go out and get drunk, and then you go and play into the witch's hands."
"I'm the eldest," Sophie shrieked. "I'm a failure."
"Garbage!" Hal shouted. "You just never stop to think."
Hal was slowing down. Dust kicked up round them in dense clouds. Sophie only knew the bushes were quite near because she could hear the rush and rattle of the gritty wind in the leaves. They plunged in among them with a crash, still going so fast that Hal had to swerve and drag Sophie in a long, skimming run across a lake.
"And you're too nice," he added,
above the lap-lap of the water and the patter of sand on the water-lily leaves.
"I was relying on you being too jealous to let that demon near the place."
They hit the steamy shore at a slow run. The bushes on either side of the green lane thrashed and heaved as they passed, throwing birds and petals into a whirlwind behind them. The castle was drifting swiftly down the lane toward them, with its smoke streaming back in the wind. Hal slowed down enough to crash the door open and shot Sophie and himself inside.
"Michael!" he shouted. "It wasn't me who let the scarecrow in," Michael said guiltily.
Everything seemed to be normal. Sophie was surprised to discover what a short time she had really been away. Someone had pulled her bed out from under the stairs, and Percival was lying on it, still unconscious. Letty and Martha and Michael were gathered round it. Overhead, Sophie could hear Mrs. Fairfax's voice and Fanny's, combined with ominous swishings and thumpings that suggested that Hal's spiders were having a hard time. Hal let go of Sophie and dived toward the guitar. Before he could touch it, it burst with a long, melodious boom. Strings flailed. Splinters of wood showered Hal. He was forced to back away with one tattered sleeve over his face. And Miss Angorian was suddenly standing beside the hearth. smiling. Howl had been right. She must have been in the guitar all this time, waiting for her moment. "Your witch is dead," Howl said to her. "Isn't that too bad?" Miss Angorian said, quite unconcerned. "Now I can make myself a new human who will be much better. The curse is fulfilled. I can lay hands on your heart now." And she reached down into the grate and plucked Calcifer out of it. Calcifer wobbled on top of her clenched fist, looking terrified. "Nobody move," Miss Angorian said warningly. Nobody dared stir. Howl stood stillest of all.
"Help," Calcifer said weakly.
"Nobody can help you," said Miss Angorian. "You are going to help me control my new human. Let me show you. I have only to tighten my grip." Her hand that was holding Calcifer squeezed until its knuckles showed pale yellow. Howl and Calcifer both screamed. Calcifer beat this way and that in agony. Howl's face turned bluish, and he crashed to the floor like a tree falling, where he lay as unconscious as Percival. Sophie didn't think he was breathing. Miss Angorian was astonished. She stared at Howl. "He's faking," she said.
"No, he's not!"
Calcifer screamed, twisted into a writhing spiral shape.
"His heart's really quite soft. Let go!"
Sophie raised her stick, slowly and gently. This time she thought for an instant before she acted. "Stick," she muttered. "Beat Miss Angorian, but don't hurt anyone else." Then she swung the stick and hit Miss Angorian's tight knuckles the biggest crack she could. Miss Angorian let out a squealing hiss like a wet log burning and dropped Calcifer. Poor Calcifer rolled helplessly on the floor, flaming sideways across the flagstones and roaring huskily with terror. Miss Angorian raised her foot to stamp on him. Sophie had to let go of her stick and dive to rescue Calcifer. Her stick, to her surprise, hit Miss Angorian again on its own, and again, and again. But of course it would, Sophie thought. She had talked life into that stick. Mrs. Pentstemon had told her so. Miss Angorian hissed and staggered. Sophie stood up, holding Calcifer, to find her stick drubbing away at Miss Angorian and smoking with the heat of her. By contrast, Calcifer did not seem very hot. He was milky blue with shock. Sophie could feel that the dark lump of Howl's heart was only beating very faintly between her fingers. It had to be Howl's heart she was holding. He had given it away to Calcifer as his part of the contract, to keep Calcifer alive. He must have been sorry for Calcifer, but all the same, what a silly thing to do. Fanny and Mrs. Fairfax hurried through the door from the stairs carrying brooms. The sight of them seemed to convince Miss Angorian that she had failed. She ran for the door, with Sophie's stick hovering over her, still clouting at her. "Stop her!" Sophie shouted. "Don't let her get out! Guard all the doors!" Everyone raced to obey. Mrs. Fairfax put herself in the broom cupboard with her broom raised. Fanny stood on the stairs. Letty jumped up and guarded the door to the yard, and Martha stood by the bathroom. Michael ran for the castle door. But Percival leaped up off the bed and ran for the door too. His face was white, and his eyes were shut. But he ran even faster than Michael. He got there first, and he opened the door. With Calcifer so helpless, the castle had stopped moving. Miss Angorian saw the bushes standing still in the haze outside and raced for the door with inhuman speed. Before she reached it, it was blocked by the scarecrow looming up with Prince Justin hung across its shoulders, still draped in Sophie's lace shawl. It spread its stick arms across the door, barring the way. Miss Angorian backed away from it. The stick beating at her was on fire now. Its metal end was glowing. Sophie realized it could not last much longer. Luckily, Miss Angorian hated it so much that she seized hold of Michael and dragged him in its way. The stick had been told not to hurt Michael. It hovered, flaming. Martha dashed up and tried to pull Michael away. The stick had to avoid her too. Sophie had got it wrong as usual. There was no time to waste. "Calcifer," Sophie said, "I shall have to break your contract. Will it kill you?"
It would, if anyone else broke it, Carcifer said hoarsely. That's why I asked you to do it. I could tell you could talk life into things. Look what you did for the scarecrow and the skull.
Then have another 1,000 years, Sophie said, and willed very hard as she said it, in case just talking was not enough. This had been worrying her very much. She took hold of Calcifer and carefully nipped him off the black lump, just as she would nip a dead bud off a stalk. Calcifer whirled loose and hovered by her shoulder as a blue teardrop.
I feel so light, he said.
Then it dawned on him what had happened.
I'm free, he shouted.
He whirled to the chimney and plunged up it out of sight.
I'm free!
Sophie heard him shout overhead faintly as he came out through the chimney pot of the hat shop. Sophie turned to Hal with the almost dead black lump, feeling doubtful in spite of her hurry. She had to get this right, and she was not sure how you did.
Well, here goes, she said.
Kneeling down beside Hal, she carefully put the black lump on his chest in the leftish sort of place she had felt hers in when it troubled her and pushed.
Go in, she told it. Get in there and work.
And she pushed and pushed. The heart began to sink in and to beat more strongly as it went. Sophie tried to ignore the flames and scuffles by the door and to keep up a steady, firm pressure. Her hair kept getting in her way. It fell across her face in reddish, fair hanks, but she tried to ignore that too. She pushed. The heart went in. As soon as it had disappeared, Hal stirred about. He gave a loud groan and rolled over onto his face.
Hal's teeth, he said. I've got a hangover.
No. You hit your head on the floor, Sophie said. Hal rose up on his hands and knees with a scramble.
I can't stay, he said. I've got to rescue that fool Sophie.
I'm here, Sophie said, shaking his shoulder. But so is Miss Angorian. Get up and do something about her, quickly. The stick was entirely flames by now. Martha's hair was frizzling, and it had dawned on Miss Angorian that the scarecrow would burn. She was manoeuvring to get the hovering stick into the doorway. As usual, Sophie thought, I didn't think it through. Hal only needed to take one look. He stood up in a hurry. He held out one hand and spoke a sentence of those words that lost themselves in claps of thunder. Plaster fell from the ceiling. Everything trembled. But the stick vanished, and Hal stepped back with a small, hard, black thing in his hand. It could have been a lump of cinder, except that it was the same shape as the thing Sophie had just pushed into Hal's chest. Miss Angorian whined like a wet fire and held out her arms imploringly.
I am afraid not, Hal said. You've had your time. By the look of this, you were trying to get a new heart, too. You were going to take my heart and let Calcifer die, weren't you?
He held the black thing between both palms and pushed his hands together. The witch's old heart crumbled into black sand and soot and nothing. Miss Angorian faded away as it crumbled. As Howl opened his hands empty, the doorway was empty of Miss Angorian too. Another thing happened as well. The moment Miss Angorian was gone, the scarecrow was no longer there either. If Sophie had cared to look, she would have seen two tall men standing in the doorway smiling at one another. The one with the craggy face had ginger hair. The one with the green uniform had vaguer features and a lace shawl draped round the shoulders of his uniform. But Howl turned to Sophie just then.
Grey doesn't really suit you, he said. I thought that when I first saw you.
Calcifer's gone, Sophie said. I had to break your contract.
Hal looked a little sad, but he said, We were both hoping you would. Neither of us wanted to end up like the witch and Miss Angorian. Would you call your hair ginger?
Red gold, Sophie said.
Not much had changed about Howl that she could see. Now he had his heart back, except maybe that his eyes seemed a deeper colour, more like eyes, and less like glass marbles.
Unlike some people's, she said, it's natural.
I've never seen why people put such value on things being natural, Howl said, and Sophie knew then that he was scarcely changed at all. If Sophie had had any attention to spare, she would have seen Prince Justin and Wizard Solomon shaking hands and clapping one another delightedly on the back.
I'd better get back to my royal brother, Prince Justin said.
He walked up to Fanny as the most likely person and made her a deep courtly bow.
Am I addressing the lady of this house?
Not really, Fanny said, trying to hide her broom behind her back. The lady of the house is Sophie.
Or will be shortly, Mrs. Fairfax said, beaming benevolently.
Hal said to Sophie,
I've been wondering all along if you would turn out to be that lovely girl I met on May Day. Why were you so scared then?
If Sophie had been attending, she would have seen Wizard Solomon go up to Letty. Now he was himself, it was clear that Wizard Solomon was at least as strong-minded as Letty was. Letty looked quite nervous as Solomon loomed craggily over her.
It seemed to be the prince's memory I had of you, and not my own at all, he said.
That's quite all right, Letty said bravely. It was a mistake.
But it wasn't, protested Wizard Solomon. Would you let me take you on as a pupil, at least?
Letty went fiery red at this and did not seem to know what to say. That seemed to Sophie to be Letty's problem. She had her own. Hal said,
I think we ought to live happily ever after.
And she thought he meant it. Sophie knew that living happily ever after with Hal would be a good deal more eventful than any story made it sound, though she was determined to try.
It should be hair-raising, added Howl.
And you'll exploit me, Sophie said.
And then you'll cut up all my suits to teach me, said Howl.
If Sophie or Howl had had any attention to spare, they might have noticed that Prince Justin, Wizard Solomon, and Mrs. Fairfax were all trying to speak to Howl, and that Fanny, Martha, and Letty were plucking at Sophie's sleeves, while Michael was dragging at Howl's jacket.
That was the neatest use of words of power I ever saw from anyone, Mrs. Fairfax said. I wouldn't have known what to do with that creature. As I often say,
Sophie, said Letty, I need your advice.
Wizard Howl, said Wizard Solomon, I must apologize for trying to bite you so often. In the normal way, I wouldn't dream of setting teeth in a fellow countryman.
Sophie, I think this gentleman is a prince, said Fanny.
Sir, said Prince Justin, I believe I must thank you for rescuing me from the witch.
Sophie, said Martha, the spell's off you. Did you hear? But Sophie and Howl were holding one another's hands and smiling, quite unable to stop.
Don't bother me now, said Howl. I only did it for the money.
Liar, said Sophie.
I said, Michael shouted, the Carcifer's come back.
That did get Howl's attention, and Sophie's too. They looked at the grate, where, sure enough, the familiar blue face was flickering among the logs.
You didn't need to do that, Hal said.
I don't mind, as long as I can come and go, Calcifer said. Besides, it's raining out there in Market Chipping.
The End. You've been listening to Howl's Moving Castle by Diana Wynne-Jones, narrated by Jenny Sterlin and directed by Matt Wilson. This book is copyrighted 1986 by Diana Wynne Jones. This recording is copyrighted 2008 by Recorded Books. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.